This week, Does Not Compute is once again sponsored by Hired. They're an awesome, free, no-obligations way to find your next design or development job. Hired works with a bunch of great companies from all over the country and the world. New York, Seattle, San Francisco, London, Toronto, and Chicago are just some of the places that they have awesome opportunities waiting. Hired normally gives a $2,000 thank you bonus to people who get a job through them. But if you visit hired.com/doesnotcompute, they'll give you $4,000 when you find your new job. So let's break it down. You're getting a new job, $4,000, and you get to help out Does Not Compute. Pretty sweet deal, in my opinion. Our thanks to Hired for sponsoring the show, and remember to head over to hired.com/doesnotcompute to start finding your next job.
I mean, what was Mace Windu? Was Mace Windu chopped liver?
So, Sean, what have you been up to this week? Anything new and exciting?
I'm actually just finishing up a project that's been pretty fun. I'm making a marketing site for one of our past clients, and we helped them build an application that allows users to consume their API, and they basically are like a news syndicate, I guess. So you can go to their application and see all the latest news and all the latest reactions to those news and insights and things like that. So on the marketing site, we're actually pulling in live data from the API, and we're kind of showcasing different ways that you can use that data in their application. So there's a few different sections with interactive pieces, and I've been using Vue.js and some CSS animation to make those come to life. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, nice. So you've done similar things before with just plain old JavaScript or with jQuery or similar tools. How does it compare to using Vue?
I feel like Vue has made it a simpler process for me. So I've been trying to embrace this whole idea of allowing data to update your state and not having to, you know, do custom like class writing to the DOM and changing and updating myself. So basically I pull data in, and when some of that data changes, the component just updates itself, which triggers the CSS transitions and animations. And so on, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's made it a lot simpler, and I feel like it's made it more bulletproof too, because if I'm not the one handling those updates, it's probably a better situation.
So you're new-ish to Vue. Has that been difficult at all, learning a new technology like that while you're actually trying to make a thing for your job?
Not actually with Vue. It's been pretty straightforward. The docs, I feel, are really good, and for whatever reason, I just seem to get them. I mean, there's been other cases where I've been having to learn technologies and, you know, struggled a little bit more. But with Vue, it feels pretty natural to me, the way that everything is structured. I think the only difficulty that I've had so far is that there was a new release point while this project was on, and I was looking at the docs and I wanted to update, but it wasn't that bad. I just had to change a few things that I was doing. But in the grand scheme of things, that's not even really difficult, right? That's more of a just a quick migration.
Sure. Well, I mean, that can depending on what it is. I mean, something like Angular 2 is obviously going to be a pretty big deal, as we've heard over the last few months.
Yeah, we've definitely heard about that. I was actually talking to my friend Bill earlier, Bill Columbia, and he was mentioning that him and his team are using React, and he specifically mentioned how one of the hardest pieces of using that tool is that it updates so frequently, and the API changes are, you know, the API changes pretty often, and they're always having to keep up with that. And then, you know, having multiple people on a team, having to keep them all on the same page too can be sort of difficult, he said.
I think that actually ties in really well to a question we had last week in the Spec Slack. It was from Big Blind, and he's working on a school project right now. It's a collaborative project with some other people, and they're actually, I'm not sure what the real project is, but they're using Git to store it for all the obvious benefits you get from using a great source control like Git. But he is the only one who actually is familiar with using Git, so he's kind of in a situation where he's having to teach other people while also everybody's trying to work towards a common goal of achieving this project. And so that's kind of interesting to me, because that's something that comes up quite a bit, I think, in real life dev. a lot of times there's a new version of a framework out or a brand new framework or some new tool that you're going to have to learn while you're actually trying to make a thing for your job. So that's an intricate balance.
I feel like something with that, you know, especially if you're working with a team for a school project, you definitely have a deadline. I guess it depends on a few different things, right? It depends on how willing your coworkers are to learn this thing. It also depends on how much time they also have to invest in learning this thing. Because, I mean, I remember when I was in school, I was incredibly busy all the time. So I can imagine how it would be difficult to not only get my schoolwork done, but also try to add extra learning on the side.
I think it depends a lot on the people too, like you said. Especially with development stuff, I've found if the people that you're trying to teach aren't really excited about it and really willing to put in the effort, it's going to be very hard for them to learn and also very hard for you to teach. It's kind of a nobody's going to win situation. So you definitely need people that are excited about whatever it is you're trying to teach and willing to put in some effort of their own.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's if you're trying to teach somebody that's not really wanting to learn, it really just sucks you dry and it takes away all your energy. I mean, I've had a few people in the past where actually I used to give guitar lessons as kind of a side job. And I always had so much fun with people that actually wanted to learn the instrument and actually put in the time to practice, right? Most importantly. But I always had a few students where they were kind of forced to be in that spot and you could tell that they weren't that interested in it, and it just made it really tough to be excited about teaching them. And I feel that if you're not excited about teaching something, then maybe you're not going to do the best job at it. So yeah, it really depends on the people you're with. One thing that I used to do is I would, you know, kind of evaluate what the person's skills were, and from there I would come up with a plan, like what's the least number of things this person needs to know to be able to take it to the next level? And instead of throwing a ton of stuff at this person, you know, I would throw the few key pieces. And I found that I had a lot more success doing that.
I think it can be really easy to blame yourself as well if you're trying to teach somebody who doesn't really want to be taught and you're not making any progress or they're not making any progress. But that's an important thing to not get down on yourself about. Learning is a two-person thing. It does require a teacher, but it also requires a student that at least cares a little bit, enough to try. If you're working with someone and they don't put in any effort between lessons or between weeks or whatever, however your training is broken up, then there's not really a whole lot you can do about them just not being interested.
Yeah, I've actually spent a lot of time in the past trying to make people be interested, and that's a waste of my time and it's a waste of their time. So, you know, for me, that was a hard lesson learned that, you know, you can't make everyone excited about everything that you're excited about, and that's okay. You know, that's totally okay.
It is okay. And also the flip side of that is when you find someone who really does want to learn and is willing to put in that effort, it's so rewarding for both of you. You get to see them really grow rapidly and be excited about a thing, and that makes you excited too. It feels great, and I think it just works out super well for both parties.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So I guess maybe to answer Big Blind's question, if people are interested in learning, I mean, because obviously you have a deadline and you have to get the work done, but maybe it might be useful to outline the bare minimum of what people would need to know about Git to use it and kind of go from there. And, you know, if they're able to get the foundations set, you know, you can build on that a lot quicker than if you're spreading them too thin.
Specifically for Git, we can actually get these things in show notes, but there are a bunch of great resources out there. Two that I would recommend really highly: GitHub's Learn Git online course. It's really straightforward, and it's very similar like a Code School or a Code Academy, any of those, except it's specifically related to Git. So that's a great help. And Tower, the people that make the great Git GUI for macOS, they actually have an awesome command line Git cheat sheet as well, which can be very helpful if you're new.
Yeah, I actually keep that in a pinned tab in Chrome. It's kind of funny that you mentioned that. Yeah,
it's superb. It's really well written and has all the stuff you need.
It's really great. I mean, also, if they're just having trouble picking up the command line stuff, because I think that he mentioned that he was pretty familiar with the terminal, but I believe the other classmates were using Eclipse mainly. They're using an IDE. And so if they are used to IDEs and more of a graphical setup, you know, there are a bunch of Git GUI options out there that are pretty viable.
I actually use Tower myself on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I have Tower as well, and I also use the GitHub app from time to time. So most of my committing is done via Fugitive, Vim Fugitive plugin by Tim Pope. But for anything that is more than just a simple commit or, you know, staging, I just pop open the GitHub app and handle it there.
Yeah, and knowing the commands definitely is a great thing to have in your tool belt. Because, you know, if you're on a different server, if you're SSH'd into something and you need to do Git stuff, you do need to know that. It's very, very useful. But for day-to-day things, I mean, especially stuff, like Sean said, with complex merges and that sort of thing, having a GUI is really nice. I mean, we have these X window systems that are super well-designed and have all these great features, and there's no reason to not use them just because the command line is the quote-unquote proper way to do it. There's no real proper way to do it as long as stuff gets committed correctly, right?
Yeah, totally. But, you know, a lot of these applications actually have really good support for keyboard shortcuts. And they've done that on purpose so that you can use them just as fast as you would be able to use Git in the terminal. And also, I don't know how many people use this. I use it on a daily basis, but the command shift forward slash shortcut brings up the help search dialog in any OS X application. And so if I'm trying to remember where a specific feature was, or even if I don't know where it was, but I know it exists, I can just start typing in that and it'll run that command for me. So for example, if I have to open up an SVG in Illustrator and the artboard is off like it always is, I can just select the SVG, hit that keyboard shortcut, type fit, hit enter, and the artboard is properly aligned again.
Yeah, so we'll include a link to something that explains that in a little bit more detail. But command shift forward slash is one of those things that if you don't know about it, it is going to blow your mind and change how you use your computer. That sounds so over the top, but it's totally true. It's one of the greatest things. It's amazing.
I use it every day. Actually, I showed one of my coworkers about it maybe 3 or 4 days ago. Towards the end of last week, and it blew their mind. And I always love when that happens, you know, when you show somebody something and they're just like, oh man, instant productivity. I get a kick out of it.
It's kind of like that XKCD comic. The one where the character is saying how people always get down on other people when they don't know about some cool thing that they quote unquote should know about. And instead of getting down on them, you should be really excited. You should be stoked because you get to tell that person about this awesome new thing and bring that into their lives. I think that's such a great experience.
It is a great experience. I never really understood people that just, you know, verbally beat up other people for not knowing something. That never really made sense to me.
If you think something's awesome and somebody else doesn't know about it, be really excited because you get to share that with them and then they're going to know about that awesome thing too.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, when they learn something that you might not know, they're going to be that more excited to share it with you. So it's just learning all around, which, I mean, that you can't, it doesn't get any better than that. That's a win-win for everybody.
Karma. All right, so we have a couple really neat things that we found over the last few weeks, and we just wanted to share those with everybody. The first one is AlexJS. Alex is this really nifty JavaScript tool. It has a bunch of different integrations. It can integrate as a Slack bot. It can integrate into Atom and Sublime and some other editors. It's really neat. And basically what it does is it analyzes your writing and then it informs you about things that you could maybe change about it to make it more sensitive. So it catches gender pronouns, terminology in, for example, databases or hard drive setups that like master and slave that can be hurtful. And then it just tells you, you know, a little bit, it explains each of the items that it caught and then gives you an alternative. So I think that's a really neat way to just make your writing a little bit more accessible to everyone and hopefully just be more inclusive in general. I think that's something we kind of touched on last episode, is these development communities that have sprung up and are trying to be very inclusive and make sure that they don't put anybody down and they're being very helpful. And this is just kind of an easy way to do that a little bit in your own life, in your own writing.
So the second useful item we wanted to talk to you about is a site called Upcase.com. And Upcase is actually put out by the people at Thoughtbot. And if you've never heard of Thoughtbot, you should really check them out. They have tons of useful information on their blog. They've put out a bunch of really useful Rails gems. I've used some of their gems in production apps. They're just a great resource all around. But Upcase in particular is a site where you can go and they give you different trails that you can follow. So for example, if you want to learn more about test-driven Rails, they break it down into steps and you watch a little video and then you actually can pull down code from repositories and you complete the code and then you can actually submit them to members in the forum and you can actually get live code reviews right from the community. On top of that, they also do this thing that I thought was really cool. They call it flashcards. And so what they do is they get a number of useful pieces of information, for example, about the Ruby language, and they break it down into cards. And they ask you a question on one side, and then you try to answer it. You click a button, and then it shows you the answer, and it gives you documentation. So it's perfect for maybe if you're making some coffee and you got a few minutes and you want to maybe work your brain a little bit on Ruby. It's just a really, really good resource.
Yeah, and they have a lot of different resources as well. This is sort of a similar site to things like Codecademy or Code School, but it's actually geared towards people who've been programming for a little while. So it's more aimed at intermediate kind of level, intermediate and up. It's concepts that are really good if you already understand programming basics. Also, it's not just Rails stuff. They have stuff about JavaScript. They definitely have a lot of Ruby and Rails things. And they also have some cool stuff on things like Elixir and Node. It's got a pretty wide variety of topics. And they actually release new content every single week, which is very cool.
They've come a long way. I actually used to subscribe to Upcase a while back, and I ended up leaving because the content had gotten kind of stale. But after you linked me this site, maybe it was a couple of days ago, Paul, I actually resubscribed just because the amount of content coming through is amazing now. They're covering so many different topics and everything I'm, you know, legitimately interested in. So it's becoming a really great resource for me.
Yeah, if anybody ends up checking this out, I would really recommend looking into the video they have on form objects. I just went through that one the other night, and it's fantastic. Super cool concept, and they explain it really well.
So the last useful item we wanted to mention to you guys for this week is a blog called Today I Learned, and it's put out by a guy named Ricos de Cruz. And if you've never heard of him, he puts out so many useful tools. If you've ever seen the loading bars going across the top of any Rails app or any other app, I guess, for that matter, I think he was the original author of that plugin. So yeah, he does some really cool stuff. But this blog is actually him just kind of going through and obviously writing short little posts on what he's learned that day. But for me, you know, stumbling upon this, it's been really useful because they're just small bite-sized pieces of information that I'm able to commit to memory quickly. It's not a ton of content at once. You know, it's just a small thing. This is what it is. This is what I learned, and this is how it's useful. And so I've actually been going back to this site quite often and, you know, trying to put into practice a lot of what he's written here. And it's just a really good resource. And I think it's really cool that he's actually writing about this stuff, because I've mentioned before, and I even wrote a blog post about this a few days ago, but I think it's really important to write about what you're learning. If you're able to write about something that you're learning, you're able to internalize that and think about it. And if you're able to think about something clearly, you know, I feel like that really demonstrates that you've memorized that, or it's, you know, it's a part of your usable knowledge.
I think what's really neat about this for me is that he breaks it down into these little daily bite-sized kind of pieces, which actually kind of feels like the same thing that Upcase is doing with their flashcards, where it's little pieces of information you can just go there whenever and just kind of review and get a little bit more knowledge without having to put in a ton of effort.
I think that's great. We're so used to getting bombarded with all these new frameworks and all these new tools, right? You have Hacker News, you have Designer News, you have Product Hunt, you have mailing lists. Like I was actually personally subscribed to maybe 5 mailing lists, right? So there's so much information coming at you all the time. It's really important to be able to kind of segment the pieces out that you actually need to know from all of that, right? And I feel like a flashcard system is a really great way to do that. I was actually emailing with my friend Grant. We have an email that goes back and forth and we reply every month or so. But I was mentioning how there's a lot of pressure to use these new tools coming out, and he said, "You've basically just outlined my frustration with the entire community." And he, you know, he gets a lot of pressure. Like his clients are like, "Oh, we should use React for this thing." And he's like, there's no need for that. That has nothing to do with what we're doing."
So this last topic is a little bit off the wall, I guess. But I think this is important to talk about and something that isn't discussed enough in the programming community. And that's the idea that code exists for people, not for computers. The reason that we have all these different programming languages and they all have their differences is because we are human beings and we have our preferences and we work better under certain circumstances than other people do. If we were actually writing code for computers, we would be writing assembly, but we aren't because we decided that a bunch of abstractions on top of assembly made way more sense for actual the majority of people to use.
Right. And I think that's why, I mean, we continue to see languages evolving. Obviously, you know, we saw CoffeeScript come out and that introduced a lot of things that I was missing from JavaScript. And now we're seeing ES6 come out and is borrowing some of those ideas. So I think you're right. You know, I think that those abstractions are useful. You know, I mean, we see them happen time and time again, obviously.
I think an argument that tends to come up in the programming community is that you should be, if you're not close to the metal, you're not a real programmer, or things along those lines. People say things like that. And definitely being close to the metal does afford you more direct control. And it does have its uses in the case of games, especially, and very high things that demand really high performance with a wide range of hardware. That is absolutely the case. But a lot of times, having something that is more usable for the developer, both in terms of writing it initially, being able to read it later, being able to fix bugs and figure out where problems are and follow the source code, that's super useful. And a lot of times, it's a small decrease in performance can be worth that trade-off that makes things so much more usable for individuals or especially teams.
I completely agree with that. I keep mentioning CoffeeScript, but that's something that I'm really used to, or, you know, I use it every day, right? So I'm used to it. But CoffeeScript obviously has to be compiled to JavaScript first, right? And so that kind of introduces an extra step into the mix. I have to write my CoffeeScript that has to be compiled to JavaScript, and then that, you know, gets sent to the browser for the user. But in my case, I enjoy CoffeeScript so much that I don't care that I have to transpile it. And we're also seeing now so many people using ES6, they obviously don't care that they have to use Babel to transpile it, right? The gains they get from those extra features are worth it.
Yeah, and things like TypeScript have gained a lot of popularity as well, where they have that same, it's a bit more of a barrier to entry, and it is another language to learn that is technically just JavaScript, but it actually does provide a lot of benefits for developer sanity. I think that also brings up another point. Reading source code is really, really, really important. This is something that I think every developer, regardless of their skill level, should be doing a lot of. You pick up so much from reading other people's source code. And again, the reason that that's so easy to do is because we're writing in these human-friendly languages.
You know, learning to program is like learning any other language, like learning Spanish or learning French or something like that. You know, when I was in high school, I took 4 years of Spanish, and one of the first things they did in the class, where when you were in the room, you could only speak Spanish, and then they handed out the textbooks, which were obviously in Spanish. So you can be around Spanish-speaking people, and you can pick up things from them, but when you read the language, I feel like you internalize it so much better. And for me, I actually have been learning a lot from reading the source code. That was something that I never did when I was transitioning into a developer, right? One day it dawned on me, I was thinking, why isn't this stuff making sense? And then I thought, well, I never read any source code beyond the source code that I write. So of course I'm never going to be progressing and learning. You know, I'm not stretching myself. You know, just going somewhere like GitHub and looking at some of the popular open source repositories and just browsing the code, you'll pick up so many things.
You learn a lot about the grammar of a language by immersing yourself in that language, whether that is an actual human language or if it's a programming language. Like you said, it's very similar. And making yourself read a book in French or making yourself read an open source library in Ruby will be a huge benefit to you.
Well, not only that, but you know how different areas, like different, there's different countries that speak Spanish, and each country might have their own dialect, right? So if I'm only writing Ruby and I'm only reading Ruby that maybe my company writes, that's sort of like a dialect of that Ruby. So I can go to a site like GitHub and be exposed to so many different ways of programming and things that I maybe would never think of in a million years. GitHub is such a crazy awesome resource. It's right there. I feel like I don't do that enough. I'm just kind of there committing and working on issues, it's such an incredible resource to have that much of code that you can just read through.
I actually experienced that same thing recently. We brought in friend of the show, Joe Sims, to do some contract work on a project that we had. And I was just reading through his code when I was merging pull requests. And I learned a bunch of new stuff. So it really is something that no matter how long you've been programming or how long you've been working in a given language, you have tons to learn from other people and seeing different perspectives of how they work with that language.
Yeah, and not only that, with GitHub, you can even add comments on the individual lines. So if you're in a repository and you don't understand how something might work or there's a certain line that's confusing to you, you could toss a comment on it and ask a question, right? That to me is incredible that you don't have to kind of describe what's confusing. You can say this piece right here, this is what I don't get.
That's a great tool for anything, really. That's awesome for code reviews as well. If you know, this method could be rewritten this way, or I don't quite understand how this thing works or why this thing works a given way. It doesn't just have to be if you're reading to learn. It can also be reading for productivity.
Definitely. So if you're not used to just going to GitHub and reading somebody else's code, I want to challenge you this week just to give that a shot. Go find maybe even a gem or maybe even a React plugin or a jQuery plugin or something that you use often. Just go and look at the source code and see how it's made. I guarantee you that you will learn something there.
We'd love to chat in the spec Slack. So pop in there and say hi. We're almost always around, and it would be very cool to hear what all you folks think. Thanks for listening to Does Not Compute. Remember to check out this week's sponsor, Hired. Hired has a bunch of great development and design jobs at over 2,500 awesome companies based all over the world. And if you visit hired.com/doesnotcompute and get a new job through them, they will give you a $4,000 thank you bonus. If you enjoyed today's episode, we deeply appreciate a rating or review in iTunes. And we'd love to hear from you on Twitter @DNCcast.